This episode of the Hard Drive DL is brought to you by our friends at Napa Auto Parts. Conquer the job with Napa know-how.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
What's up, rock fans? It's Hard Drive DL, the Hard Drive Radio podcast, and I am Paulie Walnuts, delighted to have you with us here today as we return to the sweaty back corridors of Rock on the Range once again. Luber just got to sit down with Alter Bridge guitarist Mark Tremonti to talk about their latest album and what's going on in the world of Alter Bridge. Check it out.
Hey, it's Lou Brutus once again backstage at Rock on the Range 2017 in the lounge at the back of the Alter Bridge bus with our old friend Mark Tremonti. You have been a very, very busy gentleman the last several months, and this, I believe, is the last show of this touring cycle.
This is. I fly home tonight if flights aren't canceled, you know, and get to see my kids at about 1 o'clock in the morning tonight, so I'm excited.
You know, how is it to wrap up so many months and having such a great team of people all scattering off into the wind?
We never go more than a couple of weeks without seeing one another. We go home for about 9 days and then get right back together again. So it's just a quick little break and then 5 weeks over in Europe doing the same thing we're doing over here.
Okay, that's not so bad. And how does the family deal with this at this point now when you go away? Granted, it's not for 6 months at a time, but it can't be a happy occasion whenever everybody sees the suitcase.
Yeah, this tour was tough because I was gone for 3 weeks. It's about the longest I haven't seen them. I don't go 2 weeks without seeing them. So when I go over to Europe, they're going to fly over a couple of weeks after I'm there. So I always have that relief when they come out and see me. But here in the States, we're on one. We have all 12 dudes on one bus. There's just no space for family. So we have two buses over in Europe, so we'll get them out there.
When you travel with family, and even when it's non-rock and roll, when you're out doing family stuff, you are obviously one of the most seasoned travelers on the earth. Maybe the family is not as seasoned. Are you patient with everybody who's not so good going through customs and airports and all that?
My wife is a big packer, so she's always pulling stuff out of her bag to chuck into my bags, and always paying that extra $900 or whatever it is for having an overweight bag. So that's, she's an overpacker.
So after Europe, what's going to come up?
After Europe, we're doing some touring here in the States in August. I think we're going to head over and do a couple shows around Sturgis, and then come back home and head back overseas once more and go down to South America in September.
Good. And then, considering you have so many musical irons in the fire at various times, what do you think your next 18 months are going to look like?
Right now I'm writing for the next Tremonti record, and then Miles is writing for his solo record. So we'll need a little break in between Alter Bridge albums. So we'll do that and then get back to Alter Bridge the following year.
You seem to have it pretty good where you can change gears, but is there any sort of mindset that you get in differently for different projects?
With Alter Bridge, I like to leave the ideas a little looser, you know, have me and Miles get together and put our parts together like puzzle pieces, you know, so each one of us has a big part in each song. With my solo record, I like to have stuff really organized beforehand, so it moves quicker.
And again, as you're coming up with ideas, you know, just through the course of everyday life, do you have some things that you think, well, this will work well over here, but this is better for that over there?
The only time that happens is if it's has a speed metal influence to it. It's not really an Alter Bridge thing. But I usually put my best foot forward with each record.
Does some of that depend on what you've been listening to of late and what sort of moods you get in?
Yeah, I mean, I just try to bring new influences in and on the guitar, but as far as songwriting goes, I like to try and stay in my own little bubble. You know, I like to try not to be too influenced by others. Just try to keep diving deeper into my own imagination, and hopefully some of those guitar influences that come in with new. You know, I try to come up with new guitar tunings and stuff along the way to make things keep things fresh.
How do you keep things organized? Because once these songs are created and you do have different tunings, does that mean, okay, now you've got to get your guitar team who's on tour set up that you have particular tunings for particular guitars? Does that ever get kind of like being a traffic cop or something?
Yeah, you know, I have a lot of guitars out here. Every tuning I have to have a backup for it or a backup for two different tunings. But I have a good probably 10 guitars out with me at all times because, you know, our tunings are all over the place.
And the guitars you bring out, are any of these museum pieces or any of these super specialized?
No, I mean, they're just your normal PRS guitars. I've got two. We have an A and B rig in case we have to do a show on the other side of the planet and have to get around quick. So I, you know, they're just touring guitars. Some of them are my favorite guitars, but none of them are, you know, the most collectible thing in the world that I don't want to get damaged. I let my guitars get nicked up. It gives them character.
And if you would, you know, the Paul Reed Smith guitars, and they are still based in Maryland, I believe, they have a particular look to them that's unlike anything else. Is there some sort of guitar nerd way that you can explain how they do what they do?
I think they're just really good at, you know, finishing the guitars. I think they pick the right woods. They have the right stains. I think they really put a lot of effort into their you know, finishing stages where, and their quality control is good. You know, some companies you go to and you buy a $4,000 guitar that doesn't play as good as their $1,000 guitar, you know, and it's a shame sometimes when you just don't know better. Like when I was a kid, I bought one of their guitars and it was near as good as a guitar I had bought years before for half the cost. And, with PRS, it's pretty, you know, pretty solid. Every guitar is pretty similar.
And pardon such a sort of, you know, bush league question, but I don't know. Do you get guitars sounding particular ways based on the kind of metal that's used in the fret, the kind of wood that's used, the kind of finishing that's done to whatever the wood is? Does that all that stuff affect the actual guitar tone and sound?
Everything that goes in the guitar affects it. You know, there's chambers, guitars that have chambers in them have pretty much just holes inside of the guitar to make it lighter, which changes the sound. I like heavier guitars. You have, you know, the rosewood necks, and then you have the maple necks that are brighter than the rosewood, and then you have ebony necks that I've never even used before. You have you know, jumbo frets for that more Strat style sound, or you can go 100 different ways and get tons of different sounds, but my signature model is the kind of everything that I like in a guitar.
Did you ever in your wildest dreams when you were a kid think you would be able to be sitting here talking about having your own signature model guitar? That's still got to be kind of a thrill.
Yeah, no, that was one of the highlights of my career, is the opening that first case of the first, you know, the first guitar. It's just, yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's, I remember turning down my first endorsement. I think it was Hamer guitars way, way back in the day. And I liked the guitars, but it just, it didn't feel quite right to me. And when PRS offered to build me a guitar exactly to my specs, it was a dream come true.
I remember seeing Cheap Trick one time, who I've seen, I don't know, 50, 100 times through the years, and Rick Nielsen, their guitar player, has one of the most famous guitar collections in the world. And the friend that I was watching the show with was breathless as Nielsen brings out a different guitar for each song. And that's a blah, blah, blah Gibson Les Paul worth 800 bazillion million dollars. What is it that drives prices up on particular guitars? What makes them particularly rare or collectible? Because sometimes it's not the smallest number of copies that are made of a guitar. There are other factors. What drives guitar prices?
In certain cases, sometimes it's illegal to make a guitar because it has a finish on it that you can't do anymore, but then you can go and get the Gibson or whoever else it is just to put that finish on there and you pay the fine or whatnot. But like a 59 Burst is probably the one that everybody's going after now. That's just, they could be $400,000, $300,000, $500,000, you never know, but if in a good condition, 59 Burst is something that... if you can find for a good deal, grab it up and then call me. You know, six Les Paul, 1960 Les Paul is another one. It's got a little thinner of a neck on it, but it's, you know, another very desirable guitar. The old original, I think it's the 58 Flying V, Gibson Flying Vs are very, very hard to find. The Carina Flying Vs, crazy prices, even higher than the 59 Bursts, but... you know, they all, you know, Strats, if you have, the reason a Strat is expensive is you have a company called CBS that came in and bought fender in 65. And when they did that, just like most companies, they tried to make things cheaper and more affordable to build, and they cut out what made the guitar cool in the first place. So if you can find a fender from 1950 or to 1965, it's going to be really valuable. And grab it up.
Just to backtrack to something you said at the beginning of that, you said there are certain finishes that are illegal to use now or pay a fine. Like, are they finishing it with American Eagle blood, or is there some sort of bad chemicals, or what is it?
Yeah, it's just toxic stuff. And sometimes also there's woods that you're not allowed to, go and chop down trees in the rainforest to build your guitars. And you know, that the woods are getting more and more, restricted. And, I remember when Paul told me that he had bought, the Stradivarius family's plot of land or something where he got a bunch of the woods to build, the same woods from the same tree farm as the Stradivarius
genes,
stuff.
Genes,
yeah. Yeah. So it's the woods are very important, and a lot of them are illegal now.
More episodes of Hard Drive DL at harddriveradio.com. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app and keep listening.
Once again, backstage at Rock on the Range 2017 in the Artist Lounge. I'm Lou Brutus. Dustin of Starset joins me. This is a huge gig for anybody, but you are, in fact, from Columbus, Ohio, so this is a little extra special.
Yeah, it's always crazy. This is our second time at Rock on the Range, and now we're on the main stage, so it's going to be a little bit surreal.
And you guys have always put on an incredible production. You really have become one of my favorite live bands to see. Tell me about setting something up like this on a non-headlining day where you've got an extra quick in and an extra quick off. It's a little crazy for you.
Yeah, especially for what we have up there. A lot of it's headline-esque production for a theater or larger. And when I design something, I take that into consideration, an ease of setup and teardown. So everything we have is quite quick for the actual application. We have this new cube, which is there's projection mapping on it, and the drums are inside it. So it's crazy video. And then all of a sudden, once Adam starts drumming, he appears. It's sort of a magic trick. But the setup for that is pretty efficient. And my touchscreen comes out. It folds out of a box, and then as soon as you open it, all of the software loads itself, and then the software within the software loads itself. And the entire process takes about 38 seconds. So, you know, all of these considerations, the backpacks the guys wear for cryo, so they have like thrusters on their elbows that are 3D printed, but everything is self-contained. So as soon as they put it on, they're walking out with it. There's no setup. So, yeah.
Basically, this is like Prometheus, but with a much better soundtrack.
I'll take it.
By the way, this being your hometown, there's a number of family here. I'm going to embarrass your dad, Tim, here for just a moment. Tim, Dustin's dad, is sitting over here as well. I'll keep it short because I know you don't want to do this, but you've got to be terribly proud of your boy.
Yes, I am. It's kind of a surreal experience every time I get to see him.
The latest tune that you guys are featuring from the album, I think, is probably my favorite. It's a beautiful one called Satellite, if you could give me some insight into the tune.
Yeah, a lot of times when you get a track going, you know it's special, and it has just this sort of engaging chord structure, and the drop into the chorus is powerful. And when that happens, I tend to slow down and go, you know, every song's different when I think it's good, but it's good for different reasons. Like, this is emotive or ethereal or vibey. But this one, you know, I knew it had like a sort of single potential, but with a little special extra Starset-y thing. So I a lot of times I'll come up with a melody right on the spot or within a week. This one, it took me a while, and I kept rewriting the melody and rewriting it. And then I was in L.A. actually, recording drums for some of the other ones, and walking down, I just go for these crazy hikes, and I was on a hike in actually Runyon Canyon, which is not my favorite place, but it's there. I like to hike the other places much more, like Griffith Park and stuff. I'm on a tangent now. but I was walking down Sunset, and all of a sudden, just a glimmer of the melody started to come to me, and I was supposed to leave on a flight 30 minutes later, and I canceled it, and I booked a hotel and just sat there for the next 12 hours finishing the melody, and then sometime that night, maybe 4 a.m., the first phrase of Satellite came to my mind after I had the melody, and it became a sort of... there are many metaphors in all the songs concurrently, and that one is no different. But you know, one of the metaphors of that song is essentially equating Satellite to a love from a distance, and all of the things that can entail from that.
I have been talking a lot the last couple of years about a huge event occurring Monday, August 21st, a total eclipse of the sun with the path of totality crossing right across the middle of the United States over a dozen states. And the one band I have been most curious about and what they will be doing that day is Starset. Dustin from the band joins me right now. You've got to be, I think, extra excited about this than maybe anybody else in music.
Yeah, as for about the last year, I've been chatting with my agent about how important it is. And there have been some radio stations that have hit us up with event ideas, but I've kept it entirely open the day because I want it to be special. And one of my favorite bands is Sigur Rós, and they have this this video where they go to various beautiful places in Iceland and play random pop-up shows, and it's amazing, and just this expanse behind them. That's the closest, that day will be the closest I feel we could ever get to that. That'll be our element. Their element is Iceland, this will be our element, and I want it to be like that. I want it to be something special. So haven't discovered what it will be yet, but we have to figure it out soon.
Whatever you end up doing, I want to be there for it. Even if it's a secret, you got to give me like a week's time so I can make travel arrangements to be wherever it is. Will you promise me at least that much?
Absolutely, yeah, for sure.
Excellent, good. Let's talk about the tune Monster. I would love to play that. What kind of insight can you give?
Monster is one of the craziest things about Monster is that it started on the radio in October. And so what has that been? That's like, I don't even know. Is that 7 months, basically? Which is very... that's what happens with us, is our songs go slow to the top. A lot of songs go up and down. I prefer it, the long game. It's a little more stressful, and you got to kiss more babies and shake more hands. But it in the end, it makes the songs last longer, and they're almost timeless. I mean, My Demons is still getting spun, and that's what you really want. And so Monster is very similar. There's a little the story behind that. I knew immediately once this was a song where did music and then went into the vocal booth and did the melody all the same day, and immediately knew it was a single. But the next piece of the equation, which is always the hardest, because you know, as you write, you can get the good music, but then there's a smaller chance that you're going to get the good melody after that. And there's an even smaller chance that you're going to get the good idea for song, and then after that, lyrics. So you have to line all of those up to get a great song, and that's why I write so much. Well, Monster, I knew right off the gate I had two of those elements, and I just, at that point, it was, what is this song going to be about? What's going to phrase right, you know, mechanically, but also thematically? And oddly enough, I was also in California when I came up with that one. A lot of times I'm not, but I was in Venice. I like to write on the beach, so I was like in this dumpy hotel on there. There's a dumpy hotel there with a cool rooftop. Yeah, they are. And I'm like on the rooftop, and I realized exactly the phrase, the money phrase of this, and I was like, all right. I had various other ideas for that song, and you know, at that point it was off to the races and never went back.
You guys had been working on this caper for a number of years, back to when I first met you, when you guys were first coming up out of Columbus, the graphic novel that's being released by Marvel Comics. I'm so happy it's coming to fruition. When do people get to see it? What's it going to encompass? How much can you tell?
Well, it comes out in late fall. I think it's still on schedule. As you know, Marvel has partnered up with the Starset Society. It only seemed correct that the first installment would be a full-length graphic novel explaining the inception of the Starset Society. So it goes in line with much of the first novel that the Starset Society put out, and we will, I think that's about as much as we'll give. The novel is a good partner piece for it, and we hope that it really is successful so that we can do sequential series, because there's much more to tell.
There's been such great fan art that has come out around your band. I don't know if I should be embarrassed to admit this. I've actually made some of it myself. I took some old science fiction stuff and Starset eyes did, just because I'm such a fan of the band. But tell me about some of the stuff that has come up from fans and the things they've created with you guys in mind.
It's amazing, actually. Just yesterday, someone put up a pastel drawing. It was photorealistic. It was unbelievable. They're super talented. But one of the other amazing things, with the cinematic quality of the music, so many people are making their own videos on YouTube using our music, which was really one of the things I had hoped to happen, but I never would have happened. I never would have believed it would happen to this extent. And even before, before we had even released our first thing, one of our songs is "The Future Is Now," and I had this dream that people would take the bridge of that and make their own crazy, super hyper cinematic, almost funny, slow motion-y videos to it. And what has ended up transpiring is even greater than that. It's just like dozens of videos every day, and it's I know the label's happy because it's turned into a lot of money for them. So.
Well, you know what? I've said it before. I know some people who talk on the radio, they try and stay neutral about bands, but I'm such a fan of Starsets. I think what you guys do is it's great music and stuff, which it needs to be, first of all, but the message is so positive and so creative. I'm so happy to see you guys doing so well, and it looks like the future is very bright for you. So I appreciate the time here. I wish you luck, and if I don't see you before then, I will see you on the day of the total solar eclipse on August 21st. Dustin, thanks so much.
Thank you, man. That's awesome.
Thank you once more to Dustin from Starset for coming around and hanging out with us, talking about all that good Starset stuff and all the cool technical stuff they do. And if you have not seen them live, I insist that you go. It is a spectacle, to say the least. Very entertaining stuff. And they write some damn good rock songs, too. Thank you so much for checking out Hard Drive DL. We love having you here with us every week as we bring you up close and personal with the rock stars that you love. And we love having you here. You can check us out on the web, harddriveradio.com. While you're there, you can see who's on tour in the Road Rage page, check out what's coming up on the show, or just maybe read some music news and dirt. We're also on the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Hard Drive Radio. Until next time, I'm Paulie Walnuts. Thank you for listening to Hard Drive DL.
This is Hard Drive DL. Check out more. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app or visit harddriveradio.com.